This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Take some time to pat yourself on the back. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. So far, it is a foggy afternoon, 42 degrees at O'Hare with some light rain. We'll give you more the forecast as we go along.
And the Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. An early announcement this morning about the prospects of a trade deal with China sent the markets tumbling. Let's get the latest now from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
Rob, that's exactly right. Stocks weren't looking that great to begin with. And then President Trump's chief economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, suggested we're not even close to a trade deal with China. He told Fox Business there is a, quote, sizable distance to go. The Dow is down about 300 points or more than 1%. NASDAQ losing 102 points. And the S&P is lower by 33. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down almost 1%. Britain is to leave the European Union in just 50 days. There's still no plan for the UK's economic relationship with Europe after that. The head of Britain's central bank says the uncertainty is cascading through Britain's economy. The UK and the European Union are lowering their economic forecasts. Here closer to home, jobless claims fell. They had surged in the aftermath of the government shutdown. Remember, up 53,000. But economists were expecting them to bounce back. Instead, last week's reading was a total of 234,000. The indication we're getting today is that it may take longer for the job market to get back on track. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are learning about a big merger in the bank industry, and we're also learning something about electric cars. And we'll tell you what that is.
And yeah, it's a very important climate-related safety reminder. It is Technology Thursday. We'll talk about the future of Twitter. Their user numbers are out. And then we'll talk about a turnaround at Chipotle engineered by someone who used to work for Taco Bell. So have all that and more coming up in the Noon Business Hour.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Last week's Arctic blast, which we're going to get a little bit of for a day or so here, has exposed a problem with electric cars. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, a proposed merger between BB&T and SunTrust Banks would be the industry's largest in more than a decade. Let's take a look at this merger with Jeff Hart, principal at Sander O'Neill and Partners here in Chicago. What does this mean when you read this, Jeff?
Well, I think the main message to take away here is that it appears the door has been opened again for large bank M&A. I mean, large banks have been hesitant to make acquisitions or even attempt to, just because there's been a lot of regulatory scrutiny. But with this merger of equals, you know, being announced, it seems as though we're back to an environment where deals can happen again. So I think what we're seeing in the stocks today is your large regionals are up, kind of as money flows follow them, and your universal banks, your B of A's and J.P. Morgan's, who are already kind of behemoths, are actually down a bit as, you know, part of their advantages of scale, which I think has really been helping them, has the potential to deteriorate a little bit here if all of a sudden a bunch of regionals become much bigger, heftier players.
Yeah, this is a bank holding company based in North Carolina. And is this a sign that we should believe more in the economy now after the last 10 years?
Well, I don't know so much mean if it gives kind of more help to the economic or the macroeconomic backdrop. I mean, I suppose you could almost argue that it's a bit the opposite, that these guys are really looking for scale, suggesting maybe the environment is a little tougher. But certainly when it comes to banks, I mean, we kind of needed a catalyst in the bank space to start bringing money back in again, because the fundamentals are still really strong, but we're still left with the question in banking of what are you going to do for an encore after what was a really good year for earnings in 2018. All the potential for more M&A transactions certainly kind of is a tailwind, and you know, we'll see if more acquisitions follow, more things are announced. But I think, you know, it suggests activity levels will be picking up. And we should at least have a few weeks, if not longer, time period where these stocks are doing pretty well, and we'll be looking for more deals to be announced.
Is this evidence of the strength of regional banks? Let's just say, you know, after the financial crash and a number of banks were acquired by the FDIC, is this just a sign that regional banks kind of ran into that space and then developed a great deal of strength when a lot of the big banks were hobbled by the Great Recession?
You know, I think it does indicate the much safer and more sound kind of bank environment that banks are today. I mean, part of the reason, you know, I think bigger banks have been hesitant to try and make acquisitions has been regulator scrutiny and the concern that the regulators have about amassing kind of too much economic exposure in any one institution that can get in trouble. But these banks have done such a good job of building capital to almost unprecedented levels, liquidity to almost unprecedented levels, improve their risk management. I think the willingness to try to make a deal like this and, you know, the potential for regulators to go along with it does suggest that, you know, banking in general is on much sounder footing. And I think that that's generally a positive for both banks and the economy.
Of course, if you're a baseball fan, you know SunTrust as the entity that has the naming rights of the home of the Atlanta Braves. What is the name of the new combined entity? And will that affect their naming rights deals, not only in Atlanta, but also in Charlotte, which is the home of the Charlotte Knights?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't think it has much of an impact there, right? I mean, it's, you know, one entity to the other, it'll still flow through. And ultimately, for those naming rights, they're paying for them. And the people they're sponsoring are going to want to have that payment still come in. So I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact there. And it is a unique, I mean, it's a merger of equals here. So you'll kind of have both entities surviving to some extent, which I think probably is more the way you'd see these larger transactions go in the future, because a lot of the big regional banks we have now are very strong kind of franchises with strong cultures, and kind of an MOE versus being taken out probably becomes a little more palatable.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff Hart, principal at Sandler O'Neill and Partners in Chicago. And coming up next, Ford makes a major announcement involving Chicago, while last week's Polar Plunge reveals a power problem with electric cars.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Ford has made a major announcement at the Chicago Auto Show just this morning. Plus, owners of electric vehicles learned something during last week's record cold. We welcome in John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv based in Detroit. John, welcome back to the program. Let's start off with Ford's $1 billion announcement. Investing that much money in its plant on Torrance Avenue on the southeast side of Chicago. What does this represent in terms of Ford's kind of competitive stance in the worldwide marketplace?
Well, number one, wow, $1 billion in that plant. That's a massive number. And it sounds like they're going to do a major redo, all new body shop, all new paint shop, new stamping line. And what it shows is the market loves SUVs like the Ford Explorer, but especially this new Lincoln Aviator, which is not out yet. But when it does, there's a lot of us who have seen this thing, and we think it's going to be a big hit. It's a really spectacular-looking vehicle, and it just shows, you know, the market is red hot for SUVs right now.
Where is the bulk of Ford's domestic production? Is it still primarily in Michigan, or is that plant in Chicago, is that an increasingly large part of Ford's manufacturing base?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, the Chicago plant is a huge part of what Ford has. You know, it probably makes more vehicles in Michigan than elsewhere, but, you know, it makes vehicles all over the country. You know, Missouri and Kansas and Ohio, and, you know, I don't have the whole list in front of me, but they've got quite a few plants.
There's also an industry change undergoing, the people who are in this industry. What are we going to be seeing that is different?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of changes going on in the industry, Chris, like you're talking about. We're going to be seeing more electric cars, especially in about 2 years' time. You know, there's the very first stick-their-toe-in-the-water move with autonomous cars. Not that you and I can go out and buy. They're doing it as a ride-sharing service in a couple of cities. But again, in a couple of years, that's going to become more commonplace. And cars are getting more electrified, more connected all the time. And that's the, you know, one of the big things coming of where they integrate your car into your lifestyle, much like so many of us have done with our smartphones.
There was a learning experience here last week, apparently, when the temperature went down on the other, you know, minus zero. And the people who are in the electric cars learned something about the vehicle's response to that kind of really cold weather.
Yeah, you know, electric cars do not like cold weather. Batteries don't like cold weather. I mean, whether it's in a flashlight or your phone or whatever it happens to be, cold weather significantly degrades the performance of batteries. And really, you don't even have to wait till it gets down to zero. In my experience in test driving electric cars, once it gets down to about 25 degrees, you can lose about 40% of the range. You go a little bit below that, you've lost half the range. Now, most people who own electric cars charge it at home. And, you know, you get home from work, you plug it in, you leave the next morning with a full tank, so to speak. So even though you're seeing a significant degrade in the range that you get, like I said, most people are leaving with the battery fully charged every morning. And in most areas, you know, charging a car with electricity, you know, compared to gasoline, it's roughly speaking about the equivalent of $1 a gallon. So it's cheaper to operate your vehicle with electricity than with gasoline.
All right. Interesting to know that. John McElroy is automotive industry analyst and host at Autoline.tv in Detroit. Still ahead, Technology Thursday, a look at the future of Twitter.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Now WBBM Business News from Bloomberg. And here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, we are coming back from deeper losses, but still pretty deep in the red with the Dow down 301 points or more than 1%. The NASDAQ is lower by less than 1.5% or 106 points. At one point, we were close to a 2% slide on the composite. S&P giving back 34 points. And the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.75%. Crude futures are tumbling, down more than 3% to $52.28 a barrel. Now let's turn to Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are lower as we go through the noon hour. Positions squaring ahead of tomorrow's monthly supply-demand report and concerns about the possible shutdown of the government, again, could hurt the economy, has been limiting buying. Also, talk of sizable distance remains in the U.S.-Chinese trade talks has limited the buying. March, the corn futures are anywhere from 2 to 3 cents lower. Beans, 8 to 10 cents lower. And the wheat market 10 to 12 cents lower. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Kurt, thank you. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are slumping. We'll see what's moving the markets.
The government puts Walgreens on notice, saying that the company's allowing too many minors to buy tobacco products.
Technology Thursday. Twitter posts a profit, but there are major concerns it'll be able to retain users.
Taco Bell is the latest restaurant chain to enter the delivery race.
Ford is investing about $1 billion in its Chicago assembly and stamping plants.
On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials down 311 points, the NASDAQ off 103, and the S&P 500 down by 34.
Dense fog advisory in effect until 2 o'clock this afternoon. 42 degrees at O'Hare with light rain topping out at 44. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Food and Drug Administration is putting suburban headquartered Walgreens on notice for its alleged sale of tobacco to minors. miners. Let's learn from Bruce Japsen, a Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. And what does the government have to say here, Bruce?
Well, Chris and Rob, Walgreens is reeling a little bit on this, and they are obviously out with statements. You just sent me a statement, obviously, saying that, you know, they'll be disciplining employees and ratcheting up scrutiny, and they have policies in place for people to, you know, give their workers IDs and so forth if people underage are trying to buy cigarettes. But we know, obviously, that with the FDA, it's an issue. I think the broader question is, why is Walgreens continuing to sell tobacco anyway with CVS, their chief rival, stopping sales of tobacco products a few years ago? And I think that Walgreens, this is probably going to push them in the direction away from tobacco. That's just my guess, because at the shareholders meeting that they had in New York just a couple of weeks ago, they were hearing from it on their shareholders. I mean, if they thought that this was an issue that was just going away, the broader issue is that Walgreens is increasingly a healthcare company, and they're increasingly getting knocked around, not just by the FDA with the minor issue, but also from shareholders and others for continuing to sell cigarettes.
Are cigarettes still very, very popular with teenagers, or are there other devices now as well?
Well, I have a teenager, and she better not be smoking, that's for sure. No, she's not. But it is. It in schools, you know, there are policies and so forth where kids, they're having to develop no-tolerance vaping policies and so forth. And that's all what I just know from a parent of a Chicago teen. But I would say that on the Walgreens front, I think that their sales of tobacco products are not what they used to be. And when CVS did this, they took a hit of hundreds of millions of dollars when they did it, but they did it at a kind of an opportune time, because they did it when the Affordable Care Act was kicking in and you were getting millions of people who didn't have the ability to pay for health care and their prescription drugs and so forth coverage. And so there, CVS was going to make it up. So Walgreens does have a pilot project, in Gainesville, Florida, where they're developing all sorts of new concepts for their store. And they're studying this issue, and they do not sell cigarettes in Gainesville, Florida. So it'll be really interesting to see in the next few weeks and months how the shopping habits and so forth and how it's going in Gainesville, because if they find this could be sort of another of the dominoes on the sale of cigarettes with Walgreens.
Well, let's talk about that when the information comes out. Thanks so much for joining us today, Bruce. Bruce Japsen is Chicago-based health writer for Forbes, and you can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings here on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are losing ground today. We're joined by Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management, based in Chicago. Paul, not too long ago, Larry Kudlow was talking about the markets on TV, but in his new job as White House economic advisor, just one sentence can move markets, as we've learned earlier today.
And it's all about the trade. And that's really what the markets are looking for. We've heard it from companies on their quarterly calls. They're pointing to trade not only with China, but trade in general as being one of the central issues for reasons why they may have missed earnings or are talking down earnings in future quarters. And that's, I think, really some of the issue today that we thought we were maybe a little bit closer, and his comments indicate that we're still miles apart.
The uncertainty over tariffs and trade, could that be considered a contributing factor into Ford's decision to invest $1 billion in its plants in the southeast side of Chicago, or is that an unrelated issue?
I think it plays into it, certainly. The second part of it, though, is we're seeing it in sales in general, that with energy prices where they're at, truck sales have picked up fairly dramatically, and I think this is their response to that, for Ford at least, focusing more on the truck sales. And certainly the plant in Chicago is one of their bigger areas for a truck sale or truck building.
As we hit the lunch hour and with the Dow down 271 points, staging a bit of a comeback, we talked about the impact of trade somewhat on the financial markets today. But you see any winners or losers emerging on this Thursday?
You know, what's interesting is once we get past the initial downdraft, we're seeing some of the former winners of the last few days coming back again. And surprisingly, as much as we're talking about trade, the international markets and emerging markets are actually doing fairly well relative to the S&P 500. And relative to domestic markets, those have already been beaten down. So a lot of the news about trade, about economic slowdown are in those stocks, and they have underperformed so long that we're starting to see a little bit of a rally there. We're seeing a little bit, too, in some of the selected tech sectors, and a little bit even in energy, although that's come off now with energy prices falling here yesterday and today.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingview Asset Management, based in Chicago. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, Twitter boosts its bottom line amid concerns about its future.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and this afternoon we're focusing on what's ahead for Twitter, which has issued its earnings report for the fourth quarter of last year. We're joined by Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, based in New York. Shelley, welcome back to the program. You are on Twitter, Shelley Palmer, and at ShelleyPalmer.com. So you're not only an expert, but you were also a statistic as far as Twitter's user base is concerned. And for the first time, they're actually releasing some of their numbers to the general public as part of their earnings report.
Yeah, look, they're trying very hard. I think that if you don't get under the hood, you don't really appreciate how much product development Jack and his group have really tried to accomplish over the last year or so. There's a hardworking team at Twitter. They've been given a gift by the commander in tweet. He spent a lot of time tweeting, and they spent a lot of time reaping the benefits of it. So they've tried to adapt the platform. And ultimately, I'm kind of bullish on Twitter personally. I think these guys are doing about as good as they're going to do. Facebook has a natural monopoly on social. They just do. Twitter has been sort of in the same spot for a while from a number of users standpoint, and they've cleaned up their act a lot this past year, dramatically, with respect to getting rid of bad accounts and bots. So, you know, they're looking like they're prepared for the future.
They
execute.
As someone who's been on Twitter for the past 10 years, you can see the good and the very, very bad of the Twitter experience. But since they are posting a profit, and there have been some rumblings about possibly selling the company to somebody else, is Jack Dorsey, is he looking for the payday, or does he still want to be the world's content moderator for years to come?
So the Jack Dorsey story is fascinating to me, because here's a guy who is doing the work literally of 10 human beings, being CEO of both Square and Twitter. I'm actually not fully sure how you do that as competently as he has been doing both jobs. So is he looking for a payday? So far, what he's doing is running two companies as well as he can. And to be fair, he's doing pretty good at the moment. So I can't get into Jack Dorsey's head for you, but I will tell you that the people at Twitter that I've spoken to over the last couple of months are all enthusiastic and energetic, and there's a good corporate ethos there. People are trying very hard to be good and understand their responsibility with respect to fake news and bots and foreign entities tweeting. They've taken it very seriously. It's actually very impressive, to tell you the truth.
The stock is down today after some news was reported. What's going on there?
I think investors look at, to be fair, I don't get excited one way or the other on a given single day's trading or even a short-term trend. The stock market, I don't think, is a reflection of what's going on at Twitter long-term. I think it's a reflection of what's going on at Twitter right now, and people are taking profits and buying and selling long and short just because they always do. So I'm less worried about the stock moving, and I'm much more interested in what the company is thinking right now, because it's seeking its own level. Its advertising revenue is going to seek its own level. you know, Snapchat just posted some numbers yesterday. They're at about 181 million. Twitter's a little over 300 million. Facebook's at 2 billion plus, depending on who you believe on the numbers. So the advertising dollars aren't available for either Snapchat or Twitter. They're not going to have a 20% increase tomorrow in advertiser sales. The question's going to be, you know, how well can they manage that company and run it? And I got to tell you, the more people I talk to at Twitter and the more time I spend with that group, the more convinced I am that they understand their mission.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Shelley Palmer is on Twitter at Shelley Palmer at ShelleyPalmer.com. And join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, Taco Bell tries delivery while Chipotle is enjoying a turnaround.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Taco Bell and Chipotle are in the headlines today. Let's get the latest from RJ Hottavy, restaurant industry analyst at Morningstar here in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today, RJ. Chipotle did very well on the economic end in money. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it really does seem like the organizational issues that the company ran into a couple of years ago, and that includes the food safety incidents. But I think more importantly, I think that the customer experience had waned a bit. I think that those are on the right track right now, and a lot of it has to do with the efforts that the new CEO, Brian Nichols, put in place. Simplified operations, but I think the company is really doing an excellent job on the digital ordering and delivery front, better than a lot of its peers. And a lot of that goes back to having a second preparation line in the restaurants. And I think they're just starting to scratch the surface of what they can do with that going forward. The other thing, too, is that they'll be rolling out what they're calling Chipotle format locations, which are effectively where you place a mobile order in and then you're able to pick it up through a drive-thru window, which I think that could be a pretty material driver for this company down the road. But it does start to feel like this company's on the right track again.
And what about Taco Bell?
Yeah, Taco Bell is also putting up some pretty impressive numbers. They put up 6% same-store sales, just like Chipotle did, which would put them both at the high end of the spectrum. For them, you know, it's kind of not any one single factor you can attribute it to. They've got a great value messaging. You know, they've had an extended dollar menu, but just they're at the top of the list when it comes to product innovation. They continue to find new products that connect with consumers' environment. And I think they're also embracing the idea of delivery, and they understand their position. You know, it's a highly demanded product for delivery, and with this nationwide launch through Grubhub right now, I think they'll continue to benefit from delivery for several years to come.
Used to be not too long ago that breakfast was the last great frontier for the fast food giants to fight it out. Is Taco Bell experiencing a great deal of success in the breakfast space, or is that still belong to McDonald's and the Egg McMuffin?
Well, McDonald's is still the category leader, although they've faced some competition from other burger chains, but also Taco Bell has done very well on that front. You know, it's been running about high single-digit percentage of their overall sales, and I think, you know, by all accounts, exceeded expectations with the delivery breakfast platform at Taco Bell. You know, typically, in the past, you've seen some of these breakfast initiatives by quick service restaurants just fail to resonate and kind of die out after a couple of years. But this, we're approximately 5 years into the breakfast program for Taco Bell, and it continues to be a material driver. It's not something that it works for everybody, but you know, they seem to come up with the right combination of products to really drive sales in the morning day part.
RJ, thank you very much for the insights, and now we're all hungry. RJ Hottavy, restaurant industry analyst at Morningstar, based in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.